Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You are listening to an RPA production, where people gather. Ladies and gentlemen, Real Paranormal Activity is proud to present The Sandman Lullaby with your host, Patrick Sean Jones. This show is meant for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Little eyelids cease your winking. Little orbs forget to beam. Little soul to slumber sinking. Let the fairies rule your dreams. Breezes through the lattice sweeping sing their lullabies the while. And a star ray softly creeping to thy bedside woos thy smile. But no song, no ray entering can allure thee from the spell of the tiny fairies dancing over the eyes they love so well. See, we come in countless number, I their queen and all my court. Haste, my precious one, to slumber, which invites our fairy sport.
Sandman Lullaby here on RPA. Yeah, that's called Real Paranormal Activity. We like to thank each and every one of you duders out there in Duderland. That's what I call the people out there in the realms of duderdom. And we have a new interview tonight, and we're going all the way out to, I think it's Utah. Isn't that right, Raven?
Yes.
All the way to Utah. One thing I've really noticed about Utah, which is really weird, is that just the spirits and the entities that are in that land. And you have experience with a lot of the spirits and the entities in that land that I know of. Let's let you introduce yourself first so the listeners out there actually know who you are.
Hi, my name is Lady Raven, also known as Raven White. I am an occultist, paranormal investigator, theistic Satanist. I have been, stealing and, working with the paranormal since I was 12 years old. And over the course of the years, I've had all these different experiences in different areas and different states. And I've learned that some places are more active than others. And what I find really interesting about activity is the places that are were like Native American lands,
right?
And that end up being some of the most active places out there.
Well, what got you interested in the basically the paranormal, investigating the paranormal?
Honestly,
yeah.
When I was living in New Hampshire, we moved there when I was 8. We lived next to a graveyard. It was there was a privately owned graveyard, and it was really old, like Civil War and World War One, vets and stuff. It was privately owned, attached to our driveway, and that was really cool because I was always fascinated, and I would go in there as a little kid and clean off the headstones.
That's cool. That's actually very cool doing that. That's a very
I always felt like really peaceful there. I always felt like it was my place of solace, and a lot of people, would said that was really weird behavior, but that was morbid, but whatever. And anyway, we lived in this two-story house, nice two-story house, and next to the graveyard. And I actually started to see what almost looked like a reaper that would walk across my room. And I don't know if it was actually a reaper because, I was very young and, with Hollywood and everything, but it was definitely, a very tall, lanky shadow figure that stood almost 7 feet tall, cloaked, and it would move across my room and walk around, and I thought it was, normal because we lived next to a graveyard. I thought this was just something that happens when you're around, areas where people are buried, it just seems normal to me, and I never could get it to communicate with me, but I gave it a name of Silas because I had, at the time, I had an obsession with the Da Vinci Code, and
right.
I thought Silas was like the coolest name ever, so I named this entity Silas, and that's what started my whole thing, because even younger, since I was like 5, I started watching all the occult, TV shows and movies and everything, so I was already interested. But, when I was 12, I started having these first experiences, or, I might have actually had experiences before that I just didn't pick up on or pay attention to,
Right.
But the first very, very obvious tall shadow, figure entity was when I was 12. And after that, I was, hooked because I was like, I'm actually seeing this. This is real. Obviously there's like a lot of skeptics or whatever, because people are uncomfortable with thinking that there's anything out there besides humans. And, that's fine. They could deal with that. But, to me, I knew it was real. I knew it wasn't psychosomatic. I knew I wasn't having hallucinations. So I wanted more. And so
did this, were you wide awake when this happened?
Yes, I was awake. Every time I saw this Silas character, I was completely awake.
Okay, my next question is when you went from New Hampshire to where you, you said you moved all over the place.
Yes, I did. I did a bit of travel.
Did you have an attachment? Did it follow you by any chance?
This particular entity didn't leave. I think that it was attached to the land.
Right.
Because a lot of the differences, you have your entities, your demonic, your poltergeist, your lost souls, you know, so, I mean, depending on what kind of, you know, vibrations that it had would depict if it could leave, you know, a place of where it was attached to or, you know, go somewhere else.
So what do you think about attachments, though?
I believe that, absolutely believe that certain entities, if they're strong enough, that they could attach to other living things.
Right.
Like a living conduit.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
Because you study the left-handed path, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to explain to people what the left-handed path actually is? Because some people might not actually understand the right-handed and the left-handed path, or basically white, black, or gray magic.
Okay. So, you know, there's a lot of different definitions of left and right. Left-hand path is more based off of fact and discovery and delving into different, you know, paths like Satanism, voodoo, necromancy, Palo Mayabre, occultism, you know, Bislipus, people on the left-hand path. You know, it's also seen as, like, the more sinister path. There's, you know, like I said, it's not, and there's nothing, like, evil or whatever about the left-hand path. You know, it's just way back in the day, the Catholics had this thing where people who were left-handed, you know, were seen to be devil worshippers, and, you know, they actually, you know, would, you know, tell you to stop writing. They did this to my grandma when she was in Catholic school. She was left-handed, and, you know, so they did that, and then they did, oh, the left-hand path, you know, the devil, whatever, you know, they ruin everything. But that's really not trying to bash, but anyway, so, like, the left-hand path is more, you know, self-discovery, discovering the shadow self, you know, trying to raise your vibrations to try to become a living god. You're more about hailing thyself instead of, you know, worshiping an Abrahamic god. Right-hand path is more like paganism, Wicca, Christianity, some of the other Abrahamic religions, shamanism. Shinto is kind of like in between right and left. It's a very balanced path. Even some of paganism and stuff can be also LHP. You know, they're called dark pagans. And a lot of people that practice witchcraft are, you know, considered to be gray witches because they understand that they need to balance between, you know, what they consider light and dark,
right.
And they practice both sides of the spectrum. Which is when I was pagan, I was gray because I was always interested in both sides, and then I went completely left. But you know, I learned some really great stuff in the RHP, and you actually learn that by combining what you learn on the right hand path and the left hand path, it helps create more absolute truth and answers. right. Instead of just trying to fill in the guess what the in-between pieces are. I feel like there's truth in, like, all of the past. So, but, you know, like I said, even my opinion is subjective to that because a lot of people might disagree with me. But for me, I found it helpful to learn about other religions and cultures and past to find out what kind of truth and information resonated with me and what I needed to learn.
Can you tell me some experiences that you might run into when you're using a left-hand path? Like when, because I know you did some ritual work just recently.
Yes, I've been doing rituals for several years. Like I said, there are different rituals, you know, different kinds of witchcraft and, you know, paths and practices. Recently, the most recent ones we did an evocation and invocation to Beelzebub. We did an invocation to Sarath, and we did an invocation to Lilith. And then we also did an invocation for Loki, Azazel, and Prometheus.
And how did that turn out?
Honestly, you know, it was different results for every ritual. When you're doing evocation, obviously you're trying to get a physical manifestation or astral manifestation, you know. With invocation, you're trying to have them, you know, flow some of their, you know, their energy into you and connect with you mentally so that you could speak with them and learn from them. When we did our Lilith ritual, I believe it was yesterday, it was an invocation, and when I meditated on it, I could feel the presence, and it was very powerful. It was a really great experience because, you know, that entity is one that I haven't, actually tried to work with, because, you know, I usually just pick ones that I'm just really drawn to, but I like trying new things and working with as many as possible because you could learn something new from all of them.
No, that's true. What I was going through in my mind when you were talking about that one thing you were talking, we were going back and forth on Facebook about, was that sometimes you don't see or you don't feel the man.
You don't feel it.
It's one thing that I've really learned over, I'm not going through how many years because I'm an old guy, but the thing, what I've really noticed when you do rituals or stuff like that, that there is human time, that there is no such thing as time. If you do a ritual that you don't know, you could have felt the presence, or the presence could have been brought to you a week before you actually did the ritual, because there's no concept of time when it comes to that. And that was the only thing I was trying to get you to understand about that.
Absolutely.
It's like ghosts. If you know, when you have you ever experienced actually have you actually fully seen or heard a ghost talk to you before?
Honestly, I've seen like ghost cars, and like it is funny. I was with a couple friends. We were in Tennessee. We were near Normandy Lake and Fire Lake.
Right.
And we saw this car. And, you know, back in the day, we used to, like, you know, drink, drive around, do whatever, go into the woods, explore graveyards, you know, and look for activity. And we saw this car, and we didn't know it was a ghost car. It looked like a regular car, and we decided to follow it. I don't know why, but we kind of got this hunch, like, hey, this they're acting weird, like, let's follow them, you know? And so we follow this car, and we go all the way down this dirt road to a dead end on this road called the Devil's Backbone.
Right.
And we get all the way to the end. It's a dead end, and the car is gone.
Wow.
Completely gone. And
Crystal clear when you saw it? Was it?
Yeah. It was crystal clear, lights on. I mean, we couldn't see, like, clearly, like, the people driving it.
Right.
But, like I said, we followed it all the way down the Devil's Backbone, and we get to a dead end, and there was a graveyard there.
And how did you feel when, did you feel like your mind did a, like, flip on that, or were you excited when you saw that?
Like we freaked out. We're just like, what? You know, that can't be possible. You know, obviously trying to come up with rational reasons, but what's really weird about this, that end, is it's completely wooded on both sides of this graveyard and the whole road, so it's not like the car could have, like, pulled off to the side. It was really nuts. So, like, the next day, we were like, I want to see if we could find the ghost car again. We didn't see it again, but we went up to that graveyard.
Right.
And it was during the blood moon, and there were some kids using a Ouija board at that graveyard. So we kind of came up with a theory that these entities wanted us to stop them from, you know, fucking with the graveyard or whatever. And, you know, ever since then, we've been going out there, checking it out. And
okay.
It was just really cool.
You talk about Ouija boards. What do you think the connection between, we're not jumping into dreams yet, but you have me so interested in this. But before we get to dreams, tell me about Ouija boards. What's your theory of Ouija boards?
Honestly, I think that most divination tools work. Ouija boards, what's cool about them is if you know how to use them correctly and if you have a real one, I mean, I guess you could try to use the Hasbro version, but I wouldn't. I would try to, like, make one or, you know, get a wooden one, you know. But when you use it, it's supposed to open a portal to, you know, to the void, or purgatory, or limbo, whatever you want to call it. For me, I call it the void. And when you open that portal to the void, then you're able to, you know, go create a connection to the astral. Now, what I understand about Ouija boards is that you have to be very careful about them.
Yeah, I don't mess with them.
because you don't always automatically connect to the spirit that you're trying to talk to,
right.
And sometimes you can get a different one,
right.
and it can lie.
Yeah, you don't know who you're talking to.
Because these spirits and these entities, they're really, really smart, and they're like mentalists. So say, you know, you're like, oh, you know, Mary, is that you? And they're like, and they heard you say the name Mary. They're like, oh yeah, Mary, that's me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mess with it. But see, I work in a hospital also, and one thing about the area that I work in, it's more people have actually heard something call their name than people that haven't heard something call their name. And that's one thing about, you know, like hospitals and areas like that, that there's a lot of stuff that goes on that a lot of people don't talk about.
And I know of this entity called Zozo.
Yep.
That is kind of part of that whole thing.
Yep, I know what you're talking about.
And so, you know, I had a really weird experience with that, too. I had my friend Keith and Jack were using a Ouija board in a building next to me. And I didn't know until, like, after, but all of my technology started going really weird.
Right.
And the phrase Zozo started running down my phone.
Oh, really? Boy, you just sent this chill going down my spine just now.
Zozo, dot, dot, dot. Zozo, 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 dot, dot, dot. And it just kept going. And I didn't understand until the next day.
You're going
to
make me turn off my phone, and you're going to make me turn off all the electronics in the studio right now. That's not a good name to be invoking. Hey, let me jump into some dreams real quick.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, now let me know something. Have you ever astral projected before while you've been sleeping?
I've done it a few times, but usually my dreams are like so lucid that, you know, I'm usually like in my dream. I usually don't leave them. I found it very hard to you know, go to a different place, because, you know, you have to go to that still place to be able to, you know, create the soul chain so that and anchor so that you can astral to a different, you know, plane or whatever. But, you know, I actually have a little bit of difficulty with that because my dreams are always so intense.
So you said lucid dreams. How do you notice that your dreams are a lot more lucid than normal dreams? Are they different from when you were a child than you are right now?
Honestly, they've been lucid since I was 5 years old.
Oh.
I remember dreams that I've had when I was 5 years old.
Wow.
It started with the first lucid dreams started as reoccurring dreams. And then from then on, it just continued even to now. And what separates, you know, a vivid dream from a lucid dream is in a lucid dream, everything seems real. You have almost full control, and you almost have similarity in your physical senses. So, like, you could taste things and touch things, and it feels real.
Have you tried dream magic?
Honestly, no, but that sounds interesting, and now I want to try.
Yeah, that's something you could do. It's working in the, because, you know, if you live to be, let's say you live to be 90, okay, and you spend a third of your life asleep, that's 30 years. So you're trying to say, it's like you talking about lucid dreaming. You have the ability for those 30 years, are you just totally asleep with no existence and knowing what's going on? Or can it help you complement your waking world? See, that was one of the theories of by H.P. Lovecraft. See, I'm a big Lovecraftian. So
something else that I thought was really cool about dreams, and it happened last week, is sometimes, you know, your subconscious or entities will leave you messages that you can interpret through your dream.
Right.
I had a few of those last week.
Tell me about them. What was some of them?
Okay, so one of the dreams, it started off, we're in the woods. It was a bunch of people I don't know, but everyone was, like, shooting each other. Didn't know why, because, you know, the dream just starts off that way. We end up going out, and I start seeing people that I recognize within the cult, and they're all just shooting each other and fleeing down an icy lake. And that dream didn't make sense to me before, but then, let's see if I could try to remember the other one. Basically, what I had interpreted it from that dream is that there is a war within the community. And, you know, I didn't really get it at first because that was the first one. And I'm like, oh, this is probably just a dream, you know. And, you know, in the dream, I tried to save two of my friends. And I was successful in saving them, but, like, I didn't really understand. But then I had the second dream. And in the second dream, I was in a house, and I was sitting there, and there was, like, five different entities. But the last two tried to attack.
Right.
And when I woke up, I didn't understand because, I knew that these entities were metaphoric because in my past working, I've always been, you know, more comfortable with them than I have been with people. So I feel like I felt like they were representations of people that I trusted that were close to me, because initially, like I said, I was hanging out. I was somewhere familiar. I was, you know, I felt completely comfortable and safe, like I belonged there, like I belonged around these entities or, you know, or whatever. And two of them attacked, and I didn't understand. Then, 2 days later, two people I know turned their backs on me, specifically two people. And then there was a bunch of drama, you know, over Facebook, over YouTube, WordPress, everything.
Right.
Between all of my friends. And I was like, these dreams, they warned me. They told me there was going to be a war within the community. They told me that there was two people that were going to turn, and then it all happened.
Do you keep a dream journal?
No, but I probably should.
Yeah, I think you might need to start doing that. That way you can, because it sounds like a lot of the stuff that's going in your dreamlands is actually coming forward, and it might help you a little bit. What about deja vu?
I have deja vu sometimes, but it'll happen in my dream, but it usually actually takes like a year or two before the deja vu happens, because I think how deja vu works is it prophesizes some kind of action that you're going to take, but you have to walk down the right path and do the right actions and do certain things to come across it. So it could happen right away, or it could happen 5 years from now, depending on your choices. For me, it's usually like an image, like me seeing someone walk by, or I actually had one, let's see, 4 or 5 days ago, where I was walking through the hallway, and I looked at something. I was in the kitchen, living room area, and I just looked, and the way, like, the pillow looked, and, you know, the remote, and the food and on the thing, and somebody walking by was an image, and that flashed over me, deja vu, like I'd seen it before. But when I had this deja vu, it was 6 months to a year ago, before I ever came out to Utah, before I met these people, before I ever moved in here. So I was like, oh, it's crazy, you know.
One last question before we kind of slip out of here. This is usually a normal question I ask. This is usually a closing question, but it takes a, you know, it depends on each person's little input. It's live or dead. If you could meet somebody in your dreams, who would you like to meet?
Honestly, it's really, really hard because I'm always stuck between two.
No, well, give me two then. It's cool.
The two people that I've always wanted to meet is Vlad Tepes III and Joan of Arc.
Okay, now we're going from right to left. Now, explain to me first why Vlad.
Vlad was, you know, he was a ruler, and he led armies, and he defended, you know, against the the Turks. And, you know, then they had that whole, then he did, you know, the thing in the forest, which might be, you know, a little too violent to talk about on the radio.
Well, trust me on this. We say a lot that goes out there. So
you know, and he was very, very ruthless, but he, you know, he knew how to take care of his people. He knew he was a good leader, even though his tactics were, you know, kind of frowned upon. But, you know, and then, you know, with, you know, the whole story behind Bran Castle, and, you know, him being, possibly being a vampire, and that whole Dracula movie, and just the whole thing. So, you know, it just always just fascinated me. So I thought he'd be a really interesting person to meet.
Okay, now what about Joan of Arc?
Now, Joan of Arc, I feel, is a very important person in history, because she's probably one of the first, you know, documented female warriors that, you know, stood up and, you know, fought in war. And she was a really great warrior. And, you know, you know, the thing against England and everything. And it was also said that Joan of Arc used to actually practice magic, too.
Right.
And that she would do enchantments on, you know, her brother and her men and everything to try to help them win their battles. So I just thought, you know, that usually in history, you know, there's not a lot of times where you find, you know, historical figures that openly practice magic. Especially back then. So I just always felt like she was a really important woman in history. So I've always been attracted to her.
Cool. That's actually very cool. Well, Miss Raven White, I'm going to leave these last seconds to you. Here in the RPA, Real Paranormal Activity Network, we like to give the people that we're interviewing that last little seat to basically address the world and just basically get whatever you got on your chest to let it out. And if you want to give any, well, first of all, how can they contact you?
You can contact me by phone, email, or Facebook.
And that's Raven White?
Yes.
Raven White. Okay, go ahead. I'm going to let you give your little last spiel, and I'm gonna back away from the microphone and give you total coverage. There you go, girl. Go.
Well, thank you all for tuning in. I actually, if you are interested in hearing more stories from me or experiences, I actually have a group on Facebook called Occult Forum Hidden Truth, and I also have a page where I blog about different subjects within the occult called Occult Mysteries Unveiled, where me and both my friend Keela from Children of the Serpent post our blog and live rituals. Feel free to go on Facebook and find us there. We also have YouTube channels. But like I said, if you go to our page, you could find every link that you could have. And, you know, if you guys want to connect and talk about the occult or talk about the paranormal, I'd like to hear from all of you. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
That's Miss Raven White. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, don't forget on, let me see, what day are we going on? On Monday, we have Real Paranormal Activity, the podcast. That's with your host, Mr. Aaron Hunter. He's the man of the power, the man of the hour, the man that's too sweet to be sour. And on Tuesday, you have Aaron's Horror Show. That's not with Aaron Hunter. That's with Aaron Frail. He basically goes through horror stories, horror mysteries, anything like that. So basically, you don't have to really check him out because, trust me, a lot of stuff out there really sucks. And on Wednesday, you have Terry's Mysterious Moments. That's Terry from Texas. And he does like cryptoids and he does brain scratchers, anything that really makes your brain go, hmm. Then you have us here at the Sandman Lullaby every other Thursday around there when I could sneak into the studio. If you want to get in touch with me, you're always welcome to go ahead and write me at sandmanlullaby@gmail.com. That's sandmanlullaby@gmail.com. Miss Raven?
Yes.
I'm going to say thank you, and you hold on, and I'm going to otherwise let the rest of the world free. Cool, cool?
Yes.
Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, thank you, and you've been in the Sandman Lullaby. Ha 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 ha.